two nuns. This is the season when the nuns come down to walk along the beach in pairs, like rare white wading birds, their wimples whipping in the wind. Only their shoes shed. They hoist their habits up above their knees and walk into the waves. But if God is this turquoise jewel of sea, wouldn't he want to take them in unwrapped, let them feel the lightness of their limbs, their buoyant breasts? So when I was thinking about this, a lot of things about death came up, and I decided to read that and realised later that she died, Rebecca Elson, she died when she was 39 of breast cancer, which makes that poem seem particularly pertinent somehow. Moth. You cannot say you did not know those singed nights spinning in the dust, one wing gone and half your six legs spent. But oh, that flame, how it held you so sweet in the palm of its light. So Domus Sharlin described this as my swan song. He said this, Sarah's stopping being rich convener, and this is his swan song. And it's a metaphor, isn't it, the swan song? If you're going to die, you can say what you like, or you can sing however you like, however badly. That's where it comes from. But it struck me that I've always felt like I could say what I liked. So, well, maybe it is, and I'm coming back anyway. I don't intend to disappear into the sunset, but you never know. It seems to me like what we're doing, we've all committed ourselves to practicing the Dharma, and part of that, certainly at our stage, Mitras and Order members, there's an element of spiritual death going on, and spiritual death is freedom. Spiritual, if you die spiritually, your ego, you let go of your ego to some extent, then you are free. So in a sense, we've all got our swan song every day, every time we speak. So with all that, and I've met quite a few people who've had a very strong, effective experience of spiritual death or of seeing no self, and like I've got a strong effective clarity around that experience of no self. And if people who have that haven't developed the first two stages of the path, integration and positive emotion, they seem to have a very, very hard time. Which I think is interesting. Yeah, it's like if you let go of a lot of restraints and you haven't developed positive spiritual qualities, it can just drop you into a very painful space of not knowing anything, which is why we focus so much on the first two stages, integration and positive emotion, mindfulness, breathing, metta bhavana, being the main two practices around that. Royokan, the rain has stopped. The clouds have drifted away and the weather is clear again. If your heart is pure, then all things in your world are pure. Abandon this fleeting world, abandon yourself, then the moon and flowers will guide you along the way. So you could see there's metaphors in there. The rain has stopped, egos lessening, self-view, world-view. The clouds have drifted away, the clouds of delusion. And the weather is clear again. Yeah, there's inspiration, there's clarity, there's the blue sky. And then the crux, if your heart is pure, then all things in your world are pure. So what seems to happen with this, if this self-view thing relaxes, there's a spontaneity arises, a relaxed spontaneity. And you've still got to live, you've still got to keep going. And you need something for that to, you need some way of living, you need some way of carrying on. You still have choices to make, you still have a life to live. You can become free from a lot of our bad habits and our negative views and all that, but you need to become free too, free to keep living, free to keep going. So I'm one of those sort of people who likes to simplify things down and put the teachings that we've got in as simple a way as possible. And one way that I've done this is to put Sangharakshita in a nutshell. Be an individual, think for yourself, follow your inspiration, and keep in touch with your friends. And that's it. Yeah. So you could reduce that again to be an individual. That would be, say the same thing. Yeah. Be an individual. Be an individual. Think for yourself, follow your inspiration, keep in touch with your friends. So to expand being an individual a bit, you've got think for yourself and follow your inspiration. So think for yourself, it's the rational mind, yeah? It's view, it's clarifying view. And we do that through discussion. We do that through talking about our views. I think that's really important. Think for yourself. We can't do that in isolation. We think for ourselves by bashing our views against other people or discussing our views with other people and working out what we think. Yeah, yeah. The reflection thing that we've been doing at the Buddhist Center once a month is really interesting from this point of view, where you reflect, you think for yourself, and then you say it out loud, and sometimes you just realize how absurd you are just because you've discussed it, just because you've said it out loud. The person might not need to respond. Yeah? So be an individual, think for yourself, follow your inspiration. Your inspiration is your heart, it's your intuition. But follow your inspiration, so act. Yeah? It's about acting. So this reminds me of the three foundations of faith, which I've found one of the most useful teachings that I've come across. If you want your faith to be strong, it needs three foundations. And those three are your experience. It needs to tally with your experience. Does it work? Yeah. It needs to tally with your reason. Have you thought about it? Yeah. And it needs to tally with your intuition. So experience, reason, and intuition. And for all of us, one of those will be stronger than the others, and one is likely to be weaker, and that's great. But if you want to go deeper into this path, you need to strengthen the strong one, strengthen the weak one, yeah, and strengthen the middle one, obviously. They're like three, I think that those three foundations of faith is like the three legs of a table, yeah, a three-legged table. They all need to be the same. They all need to have a strength about them. So be an individual, think for yourself, follow your inspiration, and keep in touch with your friends. Don't do it alone. Communicate. Yeah? We can't hide from death. We can't hide from our own conscience, so let's not hide from each other. So I met Banti a month or so ago, and I thought I'd... Because whenever I say this, often people say, Saraha, that's just not right. you can't simplify it that much. So I thought I'd try it with Banti. I thought I'd say, Banti, I've been, you know, I've thought about your teachings, and I've condensed it down to this in a nutshell. And I say it quite a lot when I'm leading classes. What do you think? So I told him what the four were. And he said, yeah, it's okay. As long as you remember, the inspiration has got to come from the right place. So that's the one he wanted to put a caveat on, the inspiration one. Make sure it comes from the right place. And he didn't say anything else. And I was sitting there thinking, I didn't feel entirely comfortable because there's been a lot of discussion in the movement about right view, about what is Buddhism and what isn't Buddhism. So I was thinking, oh, what's he thinking? What does he mean by that? Does he mean it's got to be doctrinally accurate, which is absolutely not what I mean? So I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, your inspiration has to come from the right place, not a whim. So the right place means you deeply, not a passing whim. I'm going to read a lot of poems, and some of them are completely unrelevant to the subject. I think this one's relevant, but I'm absolutely not sure. It's by Norman McKay, Frogs. Frogs sit more solid than anything sits. In mid-leap, they are parachutists falling in a free fall. They die on roads with arms across their chests and heads held high. I love frogs that sit like Buddha, that fall without parachutes, that die like Italian tenors. Above all, I love them because, pursued in water, they never panic so much that they fail to make stylish triangles with their ballet dancers' legs. So, choice, something there about inspiration from the right place, wholehearted, not doing things half-heartedly. So choice. So we make choices, you make choices. You make choices to stay. You make choices to go. Yeah? You make choices to change your life. And you make choices to not change your life. You make choices to keep going in the way that you have been going. And I think it's worth remembering that. When I was thinking about this talk, that's one of the things that I just wanted to emphasise. We do have choice, and there's no way out of that. You've got a choice, and there's no way out of that. And not making a decision is as much of a choice as making a decision. Some of you might know that a few years ago I had an experience where I thought I was going to die. And it was quite a strong experience. I was imagining my death and thinking, what do I regret? Yeah. And actually, we're all in this position all of the time. Any one of us might not get out of this room alive. Someone is dressing up for death today. A change of skirt or tie. Eating a final feast of buttered sliced pan. Tea. Scarcely having noticed the erection that was his last. Shaving his face to marble for the icy laying out. Spraying with deodorant her coarse armpit grass. Someone today is leaving home on business, saluting terminally the neighbours who will join in the cortege. Someone is trimming his nails for the last time, a precious moment. Someone's thighs will not be streaked with elastic in the future. Someone is putting out milk bottles for a day that will not come. Someone's fresh breath is about to be taken clean away. Someone is writing a check which will be marked drawer deceased. Someone is circulating posthumous dates on a calendar. Someone is listening to an irrelevant weather forecast. Someone is making rash promises to friends. Someone's coffin is being sanded, laminated, shined, who feels this morning quite as well as ever. Someone, if asked, would find nothing remarkable in today's date. Perfume and goodbyes, her final will and testament. Someone today is seeing the world for the last time as innocently as he had seen it first. So any of us might not get out of this room alive. Any of us, the next thing that happens might be we wake up in a hospital bed with our mother's pale and anxious face looking at us. And what will you regret? And listen to your body. Listen to what your body says to those questions. Dream, this is R.S. Thomas. In the dream, I gave the bird freedom. In real life, I told it my dream in its cage. It sang then notes of gold, hotter than my tears, punishing itself for my dream. It sang then notes of gold, hotter than my tears, punishing itself for my dream. So in some ways, more challenging than imagining death is imagining living on. And when I thought I was going to die, it felt great, it felt fine. I felt very easy about that. And I didn't feel I had any regrets. I felt I've had a great time, I've had a great life. I have no regrets. And then I thought, okay, if I'm going to survive, because when I started to get well, I thought I was going to survive. And it felt like a gift. It felt like I was given another opportunity. And then I thought some things that I would like to do if I survive. And that was in some ways a richer experience. What will I do? The Buddha said that the mindless are already dead. So be mindful. Pay attention to your body. Mary Oliver. Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and in the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. So, I don't know if I'm going anywhere near the subject that I was asked to talk about, but hey, swan song, do what I like. I was thinking, like, what's motivated me? If I look back at my path, I came across the Dharma 20 years ago, whatever it was, and yeah, I have felt that my turban was on fire, to use that metaphor. And if your turban's on fire, you put your utmost into putting it out. Yeah. And why did I do that? Well, I think largely because life just seemed utterly absurd. I just couldn't. It just seemed like people were playing this really, really unpleasant game. And I just didn't have any interest. And when I came across the Dharma, it seemed like, oh, there's some people playing a really fun game. And that seemed so much more sensible. This is one of my favourite poems, which, yeah, probably, I don't know if it might have something to do with it. It's called New Rain by Rabindranath Tagore. It dances today, my heart, like a peacock. It dances, it dances. It sports a mosaic of passions like a peacock's tail. It soars to the sky with delight. It quests, oh, wildly. It dances today, my heart, like a peacock. It dances. Storm clouds roll through the sky, vaunting their thunder, their thunder. Rice plants bend and sway as the water rushes. Frogs croak, Doves huddle and tremble in their nests. Oh, proudly, storm clouds roll through the sky, vaunting their thunder. Rain clouds wet my eyes with their blue calyrium, calyrium. I spread out my joy on the shaded new woodland grass. My soul and the kadamba trees blossom together. Oh, coolly, rain clouds wet my eyes with their blue calyrium. Who wanders high on the palace tower, hair unraveled, unraveled, pulling her cloud blue skari, sari, close to her breast? Who gambols in the shock and flame of the lightning? Oh, who is it, high on the tower today, with hair unraveled? Who sits in the reeds by the river, in pure green garments, green garments? Her water pot drifts from the bank as she scans the horizon, longing, distractedly chewing fresh jasmine. Oh, who is it, sitting in the reeds by the river in pure green garments? Who swings on that baccal tree branch today in the wilderness, wilderness? Scattering clusters of blooms, sari hem flying, hair unplaited and blown in her eyes, oh, to and fro, high and low swinging, who swings on that branch in the wilderness? Who moors her boat where Kentucky trees are flowering, flowering? She has gathered moss in the loose fold of her sari. Her tearful rain songs capture my heart. Oh, who is it moored to the bank where Kentucky trees are flowering? It dances today, my heart, like a peacock. It dances, it dances. The woods vibrate with cicadas. Rain soaks leaves, the river roars nearer and nearer the village. Oh, wildly it dances today, my heart like a peacock it dances. Walt Whitman. Muscle and pluck forever. What invigorates life invigorates death, and the dead advance as much as the living advance, and the future is no more uncertain than the present, and the future is no more uncertain than the present. For the roughness of the earth and of man encloses as much as the delicatesse of the earth and of man, and nothing endures but personal qualities. What do you think endures? Do you think a great city endures? Or a teeming manufacturing state? Or a prepared constitution? Or the best built steamships, or hotels of granite and iron, or any chef d'oeuvres of engineering, forts, armaments, away. These are not to be cherished for themselves. They fill their hour. The dancers dance. The musicians play for them. The show passes. All does well enough, of course. All does very well. Till one flash of defiance. A great city is that which has the greatest men and women. If it be a few ragged huts, it is still the greatest city in the whole world. Yeah, so that was a motivation for me, all that stuff. People. Also bliss seeking pleasure, if I'm honest. Just seeking pleasure is a great motivator for me. But well, a main one was a sense of adventure. The Dharma to me was a sense of adventure, and or maybe more so a sense of curiosity. Rebecca Elson again, she's very good at that sort of theme of the curiosity of life. So, yes, spring. Somewhere a black bear has just risen from sleep and is staring down the mountain. All night in the brisk and shallow restlessness of early spring, I think of her. Her four black fists flicking the gravel, her tongue like a red fire touching the grass, the cold water. There is only one question: how to love this world. I think of her rising like a black and leafy ledge to sharpen her claws against the silence of the trees. Whatever else my life is, with its poems and its music and its glass cities, it is also this dazzling darkness coming down the mountain, breathing and tasting. All day I think of her, her white teeth, her wordlessness, her perfect love. See, a curiosity, a sense of adventure. But that was certainly towards life and people, mainly people, really. To me, I just find people fascinating, especially people when they start meditating and where they start meeting other people in a context like this. The energy on this Buddha Center on Tuesday and Thursday nights, where you just get people just seem quite blown over sometimes by the way people talk to each other and just how friendly it is and how diverse it is. And it's just, I just find it amazing just watching people entering in this world of meditators and just seeing what happens over the next few minutes and over the next decades. It's absolutely wonderful. But if I'm honest, and if I look at, well, what has motivated me to do what I do, the main thing is love. It's very simple. It's just love, yeah? And a big part of that is love of Banti. He's a strange fellow, and I can't say that I know him or find him particularly easy, but there's some sort of amazing love there, which I can't put a finger on. And partly it's just what he's done, he's created. I don't know how he's done it, but he's created this context that has, you know, become my life, I suppose, for the last 20 years. And I don't think he knows what he's done, really. He doesn't know what we do when we sit around like this. He doesn't know what's going on. Maybe he does, I don't know. But he said, be an individual. He said, Sarah, be an individual, go on, dare ya. That's what he said. And he said, there's a spiral path, there's a positive path, which is just a continuous opening, a continuous possibility to expand and to keep going and to explore new territory. And the only way I can respond to that is to live it. The only way I can express my love of a man who's given that context to me and to others is to live it. There's nothing else. There's nothing else you can do, really. If you appreciate someone's teaching, that, you know, you can give them whatever you like, but the most important gift is to live it, to live their teachings. And that's me trying to explain love, I suppose. That's me trying to explain something like that. So love of Bhante, love of friends on the path. Yeah, you know, Bhante's got a certain place, but you know, for most of us, he's quite distant. He's not a he's not a presence in our lives. But we are the presence in our lives, and sort of, I've always felt like I sort of do it for other people. Really, like Dharmachandra said before, I wouldn't see any very little point in practicing the Dharma if it wasn't in the context of people. Walt Whitman, Comadado, I give you my hand. I give you my love more precious than money. I give you myself before preaching or law. Will you give me yourself? Will you come travel with me? Shall we stick by each other as long as we live? So we can't hide from death. We can't hide from our conscience. We can't hide from ourselves. We can try, but in the end of the day, we can't. So let's not hide from each other. So what's motivated me? Love. Another thing is love of the Buddha, which, see, you know, I'm mentioning four things of sort of that I love. And in a sense, the Buddha is sort of the weakest of the four somehow. I don't, you know, I feel a much more strong connection with the Sangha and Bhante and with my teachers than the Buddha. The Buddha just seems so abstract. But if you ask the question, is there anybody that you respect? Yeah. Is there anybody that you respect? Who do you respect? And how would you feel to meet them? What would that be like if they were coming to come to your house or something? Yeah. And connect with that feeling. How does that feel in your body? Yeah? And then project some of that feeling onto the shrine. That's the Buddha for me. That's how I connect with the Buddha. Yeah. And the fourth object, you could say, of this love that has motivated me to live the life that I've been living is, well, you could put it like all beings. Yeah, all beings, everybody. The world needs something. The world needs an alternative society. The world needs, people need alternative ways of living. And there's loads of alternative ways of living. And here we are. And that's great. We need to keep doing it. We need to keep doing it for the benefit of the people who haven't been to the Buddha Center yet. So I had, in all this broader subject of wholeheartedness and faith and doubt. I had a very strong moment a few years ago. Up until a few years ago, I'd always say, oh, I've got loads of doubt. I've got, my faith is very, very weak. I've got loads of doubt. I've got loads of questions in the Buddha, in Bhante, in the movement, particularly in the movement, in myself, in everything, in my friends, in the order, in the Sangha. I've got loads of doubt. And I was saying that to someone once, and they said, Saha, you don't seem like that. You don't appear like that from the outside. And I thought it was one of those epiphany moments when I realised that my feelings, my views are so full of doubt and contradiction, but my actions are so reliable and consistent. I'm one of the most reliable people I know. I'm like a freight train that just keeps going. Yeah? And so I decided that I would stop basing my self-view on my feelings and start basing my self-view on my actions. And it was a huge change. Yeah, it was a huge change in how I experience myself. The feelings, you know, they come and go. They arise and they pass. One minute I feel wonderful and the Bhante's great, and the next minute I feel he's awful. But I just keep going. So what's more important? And what do other people see? What's more important? And that was a huge shift for me. Which made me feel able to become a preceptor, and it made me feel able to take more responsibility towards all that. And it was just a huge shift in how I see myself. And what a relief as well. What a relief. Rather than going around identifying with all this inner conflict. It's like, stop that, it's just conflict, it's just what happens, it's like what being human's like. Let's identify myself with my friendships and my actions and what I do. It's just so much happier. Metta, what's metta? We develop metta. Metta's not a feeling, metta's how you live your life. Metta's what you do. Metta's what you do when you meet people. Metta's what you do when your phone rings and you look. That's what metta is, it's not what you feel. So yeah, develop awareness and love. You could say that's the first two stages, integration and positive emotion. And then spiritual death, let go of fixed ideas about yourself. Let go of fixed ideas about the world. Let go of fixed ideas about other people. So basically, relax. That's what that means. It means relax. It means stop worrying about how you are and who you are. And just get on with it. Act. Yeah? Just live. Live your life. You drive into the countryside, don't you? And you park your car and you go for a walk and you get back to your car and you drive home again. You don't do that walk in order to get back to the car. You do that walk in order to enjoy the walk. And Buddhist practice is like that. We don't do it in order to gain enlightenment. We do it because this is life. Yeah? Every day, this is life. We enjoy the path. We enjoy the journey. So if we want freedom, we have to live in a way which is free. We have to live that freedom every moment, every choice, every moment, every second we have that choice to respond creatively or to respond reactively, to just to keep banging away at our own self-view, to keep sort of presenting ourselves to the world as we think of ourselves, or just to relax and respond. And to act. So enlightenment's a way of life. From this hour, I ordain myself loosed of limits and imaginary lines. From this hour, I ordain myself loosed of limits and imaginary lines, going where I list, my own master, total and absolute. Listening to others, considering well what they say, pausing, searching, receiving, contemplating, gently but with undeniable will, divesting myself of the holds that would hold me. I inhale great draughts of space. The east and the west are mine. The north and the south are mine. I am larger, better than I thought. I did not know I held so much goodness. All seems beautiful to me. I can repeat over to men and women, you have done such good to me, I would do the same to you. I will recruit for myself and you as I go. I will scatter myself among men and women as I go. I will toss a new gladness and roughness among them. Whoever denies me, it shall not trouble me. Whoever accepts me, he or she shall be blessed and shall bless me. So if we want wholeheartedness, we just have to relax and live it. And that means the person in front of you. It means the job in front of you. It means whatever it is you're doing. In a word, we have to commit. We have to commit to what we're doing. Find your heart, find your vision, and commit to it. And that's not, my job here at the Buddha Centre, I do very much feel that I do that. And there was quite a lot of time that I spend sat in my bedroom at home on my computer looking at emails. And, well, that's just part of the package, isn't it? Yeah. You have your vision, and you can't be doing the glory bits all the time. It's like building work, 95% filling skits with crap, and 5% the bit that people think, oh, that's great, well done, that's really good, I like that. But you have to do the 95% in order for the 5% to work. And if you've got imagination, you can connect the two, and the two are real. So Rebecca Elson, this is the... she was an astronomer, so her job was looking at stars. And she, if you, is in this book, it was published after her death, and there's a few poems, 20 or 50 pages of poems, 30 pages of poems at the front, and then there's just extracts from her diaries that were found after she died. And there's a couple of short life stories that she wrote in there. Very, very moving, the whole thing. But she had this lovely way of just looking at her life. You know? So she was an astronomer. And this one is where the title of the collection comes from, A Responsibility to Awe. We astronomers. We astronomers are nomads, merchants, circus people, all the earth our tent. We are industrious. We breed enthusiasms, honour our responsibility to awe. But the universe has moved a long way off. Sometimes I confess, starlight seems too sharp, and like the moon, I bend my face to the ground, to the small patch where each foot falls, before it falls, and I forget to ask questions and only count things. So yeah, it's about keeping in touch with that vision, isn't it? Keeping in touch with the vision whilst the mundaneness of life continues on. And how do we do that? How do we keep in touch with that vision? Well, the first thing is to, what teachings inspire us? What teachings inspire you? Yeah. And how can you put that more central in your life? How can you live that more fully? When I turned 40, I think I was living with Banti at the time, and I went to see him and said, I'm turning 40 today, and I've been thinking about my life, and my life's still quite simple. My life's still very simple. And he said, well done. That's quite an achievement. Which really struck me. Whether it'll still be simple when I'm 50 is yet to be seen. Yeah. But I was struck by it hasn't happened by chance. If you want to keep in touch with your vision, if you want to keep in touch with that, what means most in your life, you need to keep your life simple. So when I became a Mitra, the guy who gave the talk, Artapriya, he kept saying something. Every few sentences he said, he looked at me and the other guy who's becoming a Mitra with me and said, never settle down, never settle down. Yeah. Which just means so much. It means in views, it means in emotions, it means in relationships, it means in everything. Yeah. Never settle down. Yeah. And I think, certainly with taking responsibility, we all take responsibility towards people and towards institutions and jobs. But to do that without settling down, without limiting ourselves and without limiting other people, that's the art. You are not trapped. You are not trapped. None of us are trapped. I'm just going to finish with another poem, another by Rabindranath Tagore, his name I like saying. Arrival. Yeah, and this will be the end. Our work was over for the day, and now the light was fading. We did not think that anyone would come before the morning. All the houses round about dark and shuttered for the night. One or two amongst us said, "The King of Night is coming." We just laughed at them and said, "No one will come till morning." And when on outer doors we seemed to hear a knocking noise, we told ourselves, "That's only the wind, they rattle when it blows." Lamps snuffed out throughout the house, time for rest and peacefulness. One or two amongst us said, "His heralds are at the doors." We just laughed and said, "The wind rattles them when it blows." And when at dead of night we heard a strange approaching clangor, we thought, sleep-fuddled as we were, it was only distant thunder. Earth beneath us, live and trembling, stirring as if it too were waking. One or two were saying, "Hear how the wheels of his chariot clatter." Sleepily we said, "No, no, that's only distant thunder." And when with night still dark there rose a drumming loud and near, somebody called to all, wake up, delay no more." Everyone shaking now with fright, arms wrapped close across each heart, somebody cried in our ears, "Oh, see his royal standard rear." At last we started up and said, "We must delay no more." Oh, where are the lights, the garlands? Where are the signs of celebration? Where is the throne? The king has come. We made no preparation. Alas, what shame, what destiny. No court, no robes, no finery. Somebody cried in our ears, oh vain this lamentation. With empty hands in barren rooms, offer your celebration. Fling wide the doors and let him in to the lowly conch's boom. In deepest dark the king of night has come with wind and storm, thunder crashing across the skies, lightning setting the clouds ablaze. Drag your tattered blankets. Let the yard be spread with them. The king of grief and night has come to our land with wind and storm.